Now, more Ebling and You on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back. Jack Ebling here with Scott Eckersley, Ebling and You, 1320 WILS. Very happy to welcome in our first guest, as we do each Friday, Bill Ballinger, the editor of Inside Michigan Politics. Hello, Bill. How are you?
Great, Jack.
Well, before we talk about some gubernatorial numbers, I want to talk a little bit about the city of Flint, a place you know very well. And with the apprehension of a person everyone believes was the perpetrator of these stabbings, 14 of them now documented as being the work of the same handyman, what does this do for the mood, the morale, the tension in the city of Flint?
Well, amazingly, I'm not in Flint today, or maybe not so amazingly, as I very often am when we're talking on Friday. I'm here in Lansing, but it's just kind of an accident. It worked out that way. I noticed that this is way up in North Flint where this happened. That's the site of many atrocities in the past, including the famous tornado of, I think, 1953, which is in the top 10 of the worst tornadoes ever to hit the United States. That's where it hit, in the northern part of Flint. It's a very strange story, Jack. I don't know what to say. I mean, the connection between Flint, of all places, which has had its own share of trouble and problems, and Leesburg, Virginia, and these other places, you just don't even know what the connection is. I mean, very strange. I mean, whoever would have, you know, guessed this? We heard the story about these people being attacked late at night, most of them African-American elderly men, and being killed about a week ago. But the idea that it would, you know, prove to be somebody who, you know, seemed to, like, roam from state to state and kill people one day after another in places that you can't even see the connection, and now trying to catch a plane to Israel, it's bizarre.
Right. He is a 33-year-old Israeli immigrant suspected in attacks on 18 men, 14 here in Michigan, and he'll be returning to our fair state after waiving any challenge for extradition. I don't think he's going to get a very warm welcome.
I don't think so. And, you know, it's interesting. They all said he was pretty big. They actually proved to be apparently bigger than people thought. He was 6'4", over 200 pounds. You know, people thought he was somebody anywhere from 5'10 to 6'2 late at night. The whole thing, just really strange. And the idea that he worked in a store up there for a long period, I guess a month, and everybody knew him and, I mean, or saw him and you know, didn't think there was anything odd about him at all. And then for this day, it just boggles the mind. I don't know what to say.
Bill, it seems like certain cities always get picked on or dumped on. You know what happens in New Orleans? If there's something bad, it's going to wind up in New Orleans.
And yeah.
It just seems like Flint is on that list.
Well, it does. But another thing is, you would never think of somebody like this in Flint. I mean, Flint has now become maybe about 55-60% African American. I don't even think of it, however, as having much of an Arab American population at all. And of course, this guy apparently is an Israeli, and I mean, he doesn't even fit the racial stereotypes that you associate with Flint. It's like, you know, Flint has become a magnet for, you know, all sorts of exotic forms of trouble.
you wonder if Flint and Detroit squared off in trouble competition, who would win?
Exactly. In fact, Flint and Detroit, unfortunately, are often coupled on, you know, bottom five lists or bottom 10 in the United States in whatever category you're talking about, crime or anything else. And you know, that's what happens when you were riding high in the years when General Motors was the biggest and most successful and wealthiest corporation in the world, and when the manufacturing base gets hollowed out and General Motors collapses, and all those jobs and the culture associated with producing automobiles goes, you're left with exactly the opposite. And Flint is just kind of like, to many people, a smaller version of Detroit. And they're both in terrible trouble all the time in every category.
Bill Ballinger, the editor of Inside Michigan Politics, our guest on Ebling and You. Bill, we saw some numbers, preliminary numbers, and there's a long way to go between now and November, but it certainly looks like Rick Snyder has a significant lead, nearly 20 points in this race. We've seen Virge Bernero trail before. In fact, you were the first one to tell us that that was no longer the case. What are the chances he can pull off another miracle?
Well, the odds are a little bit against him right now, and I say a little bit because we got a long way to go. I mean, my goodness, you got almost 3 months left before the election, and that's an eternity in politics. So The idea that somebody has already put it away simply because he's ahead in one poll by 12 points and another by 19, 12 weeks before the election, that's just not valid. Leads can be lost in shorter periods of time than 3 months. And, you know, this isn't a 60-point lead. This is a 19-point lead. And Rick Snyder could make a bad mistake. There could be some other things that could happen that could turn things around. But if I were Snyder, I'd certainly rather be 19 points ahead right now than 19 points behind. And it's a tough year, I think, generally for Democrats, maybe in Michigan and nationally, in terms of their turnout percentage in elections and how they're doing so far. Not good. Here in Michigan, as you know, we had twice as many people vote in the Republican primary as the Democratic primary. So,
how many of them were Democrats who crossed over?
Well, we don't really know, and of course it's hard to tell here in Michigan because we don't register by party.
Right.
We've got open registration. You know, unless you or whoever it is tells me you're a Democrat or a Republican or professes it in some other way, I don't know. You can't tell. You don't register by party. But it was anticipated, I know, by Mark Grebner of Practical Political Consulting in East Lansing, who's worked with me and done polling with me, that he says he thinks there were maybe at least 100,000 people, maybe 125,000 or 150 even, who ordinarily would be thought of as independents, who in the recent elections like 06 and 08 probably voted in the Democratic primaries, this time voted in the Republican primary.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what's the answer? Are these people independents? Are they Democrats who crossed over and voted Republican this time? Are they, you know, what are they? They probably are independents who, at least in the recent past, have tended to vote Democratic, and now they're voting Republican. But see, that is the trouble for the Democratic Party in Michigan and nationally this year. That is exactly what's happening.
Right.
Independents are you know, now swinging over to the Republican side. It's not so much that huge numbers of Democrats are deserting the party. Grebner indicates maybe 9-10% of all Democrats possibly crossed over and voted in the Republican primary. But still, that's a fairly significant number.
Sure. I talked to someone who'd been very active in Democratic Party politics, and he told me quietly that the best chance that Virge Bernero would have would be if Rick Snyder stood up on the steps of the Capitol and said he lied, and he's not really a nerd after all. He lied about his nerdship.
Yeah, well, that might help. No question. People would be disillusioned, shattered, to find out that the nerd is not really a nerd.
Speaking about being shattered, Bill, when Pete Hoekstra slams Right to Life for a snub and wants its director ousted, what does that mean?
Well, you know, Pete, you know, basically called it as he saw it, and I don't blame him. I mean, sounds a little bit like sour grapes, but I don't really think so. I mean, I was actually there when he made these comments this morning, certainly on Off the Record.
Right.
You know, he was pretty matter-of-fact about it. I think he's actually right. I mean, he basically is saying, you know, if you're an organization and there's seven candidates running in the two major parties for governor, five in one and two in the other,
right,
and there are two candidates who are not Right to Life, and, you know, they end up being the two nominees.
When he says there's a 1% chance he'll be on the Republican ticket, is that a 1% chance he'd accept or a 1% chance he'd be asked?
Yeah, I know. I mean, he basically says you got to be accountable to your membership, and if I were the membership, I'd be asking for my money back if this is what the leaders are leading them to, the result that they're getting. And he said it just didn't make any sense, you know, in terms of the records of the candidates on life issues. He said he spent the last couple of weeks of the campaign answering questions who'd come up to him saying, kind of like Joe Jackson in the Black Sox scandal, "Say it ain't so, Pete. What happened, Pete? What did you do to make Right to Life mad at you?" And he said, "I did absolutely nothing. I've been 100% perfect."
Someone said, "Why did Pete Hoekstra lose this primary?" They said, "Well, they didn't have enough primaries on the west side of the state."
Well, that's probably part of it. But he didn't do as well on the west side of the state as he should have. And, I mean, that's one of the reasons he lost.
Right.
And he thinks one of the reasons is because of Barbara Listing and Right to Life.
Bill, thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
My pleasure, Jack.
Bill Ballinger, the editor of Inside Michigan Politics. We're going to talk with Corey Williams of the Associated Press, and he may still be in Flint. We'll be right back with that and more. Ebling and You, 1320 WILS.